Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
My husband and I have fallen into a habit of, if you do that, then I'll give you this, with our children aged 6 and 4. Some examples include tidy up, and if you do, you'll get cartoons. If you don't, you lose too. Have another drink of water and then I'll get you some more pasta. If you brush your teeth, and you'll get your story. My 6-year-old has started using it and our 4-year-old, and it just sounds so wrong. It's almost automatic now. Please help. Feeling very, very grateful, blessed and privileged at the moment to be in a position where I get to parent and reflect on my parenting.
For sure, but you know, I'm just slightly laughing at the... It's such a good example of how our children really do take their behavioural and emotional cues from us. They're always watching and listening, and they mirror. And it's a good sign. A child that can mirror can learn, okay? So, and you've mentioned habits. This is a habit, you can form a new one. There's certain times, you know, that the if and then approach really can be helpful. Okay. Mm. If you pick up your toys from the floor, then we get to go to the park.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
if you don't, you're letting me know you don't want to go to the park. It can, if you structure it in the right way, where it's if we do A, then B happens. But if not, then it's not going to happen. And you're making a choice and you're putting that on the child that they're making a choice. At a certain age, you're promoting good regulation. But when you're using it like carte blanche, you're using it all over the place, like for things like take a drink and you can have pasta. And if you do this, you can do that. And if you brush your teeth, then you can have the story. That's the one for me that really stands out, because those are not negotiable things.
Yes, on either end. Anyway. You know? Yes.
Like certain things cannot be bargained for. Your children have to brush their teeth. They don't have to like doing it, but they do have to do it. And I would never make a bedtime story part of a bargaining.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think of all the things that we do and don't get to do with our children during the week when we're busy and we're running around. The bedtime story is so valuable for so many ways, not only just reading and literacy and stuff, but also it's that quiet, downward regulating moment. Mm. You can pick a book that has the exact little parenting message you want to get across. Mm. And, you know, it's a really lovely time. I don't think children should have to earn the bedtime story.
Yeah.
So that's one I'd be pulling out. And again, the teeth, I'm like, so if you have a child, and it sounds like your 6-year-old is showing early signs of becoming quite the adept negotiator because of this, and he's like, well, I'm okay with no story tonight. I'll live.
Yeah,
I'll be fine.
Yeah.
So now I'm not doing my teeth. Now what are you going to do? Now you need a whole new bargain to play with. So I just think you're making everything conditional. Then you are always negotiating with your children, but you're also telling them that compliance with your everyday tasks, everyday requests is actually up to them. It's not up to you.
Mm.
So that can lead to, from a child perspective, very unclear expectations, poor limit setting. They're never going to complain that you failed to put limits in place, but they do struggle with it. It makes them very anxious. It can make them uncertain. They can get things wrong without knowing that it was even something they could get wrong. But it also undermines your own parental authority.
Yeah,
so you're not doing yourself any favors. It might give you a win in the now moment, but it's not going to win for you in general as a pattern. Like children who are grown up like this, they're going to learn some things are only worth doing if there's something extra in it for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, be prepared as they get older for how those expectations of what should be in it for them will inflate. So I would claw it back. I'd save it for some of the big stuff. You know, I'd save it for, you know, once in a while when you're doing some regulation, particularly with your 6-year-old a year from now when they're more 7. Well, look, if you do that, then we get to do this together.
Yeah.
But the longer it takes, the less time we'll have to do that. Once in a while stuff, little bit of, oh, I need to make choices and I'm accountable for my choices. That can be really helpful. I would take it out of general parenting, though. Certain things just have to happen.
Seeing that they've already done this, it's so we're looking at a total reset then.
You
that
are
might
really
be, have some bumpy days ahead.
Yeah, phasing it out is what I would do. You can't just suddenly drop the whole thing. But I would stop saying drink water, then you get pasta. If you brush teeth, then you get story. You brush your teeth so that they don't, you know, get cavities.
Yes.
You know, there's your bargain.
Exactly.
Brush your teeth or you'll have a cavity. You know, I would pull back the ones that you can and just phase it out so that you're doing it a lot less. But also just thinking, like, how did it start? And I know this is more the reflection thing. How did you fall into this and doing this? It probably started with something really small, like, when I said this, they did what I wanted and it's a win. But when it becomes pervasive, it's working against you.
Yeah. Maybe if there's a book, if there's a bedtime book they could read called Have You Brushed Your Teeth?
There's definitely books about teeth brushing, for sure.
That would work. I need help explaining to my teenage children about my marriage ending. My husband cheated on me, and although I have a lot of anger towards him, I don't want to pass it on to my children. We told them we were separating a few weeks ago, but the questions are now coming thick and fast, particularly from my oldest son, who's 14. Their father cheated on, and I just don't know how much of the details to share. I've heard your parenting style a number of times, and I know you advocate for always being honest with children, but this is a very sensitive issue. I don't want my children to hate their dad. I do, and I may never be able to speak to him again, but I believe if my children are lucky enough to have two healthy parents, they should have a strong relationship with both.
Oh,
well, she's starting off from a great place, actually, painful and horrible as it is.
And it is painful.
Yeah.
And this is somebody who is hurting and angry with context.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this feels raw to me when you're reading it out. You're absolutely right. I do advocate being honest with children and not lying to them, because it only comes back on you. But don't confuse being honest with sharing all of the details.
Yes.
Those are not the same thing.
Yeah.
And children do not, regardless of their age. And you say your children and they're teenagers, but your eldest is 14. So we're talking about young teenagers here. Mm. And I think that you can be developmentally appropriate. You can be honest, and you do not share all the details. You can even tell them, I'm not going to be sharing all the details with you. That's honest.
Yeah.
But it's also parental, and it's protective, and it's appropriate that you don't give them all. As a parent, look, you're using the word hate. You're saying you hate their dad and you don't want to speak to him again. And I understand a lot of hurt and pain is going on here. But the truth is, for your children to respect both of you, they have to see that you can be respectful, or at least civil.
To each other.
To each other.
Yeah.
They really do need to see that. That you also need to be able to communicate respectfully with each other, if only about the children.
Mm.
So the whole, I'm not going to speak to him again, isn't going to work for you. And it's going to create a tension. So you've got children going, you probably planned, like you say, we told them we were separating. I've no doubt a lot of deep breaths went into sitting down together to deliver what is a really difficult, painful message. But I also think it is honest if you tell your 14-year-old that you and his dad are dealing as best you can with a lot of changes in how you feel about each other, that your feelings for them will never change, that as parents you both love them and that's what you will always have in common. But you're also dealing with the difficult decision not to stay together, and it's really hard. And if you're 14-year-old, it sounds like he is, he's going, but why is this happening? What happened?
Yeah.
You can say, look, the reasons for that are really complex and they're between me and your dad. And it wouldn't be appropriate for me to share those with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's 14. You can say that to him.
Yeah.
Always reminding that you're going to try to co-parent together respectfully, that you both love him and his sibling, and that will never change. But it's going to take you some time to adjust and to get used to things. And you can even say, look, my feelings are hurt right now.
Yeah.
And I'm probably behaving in a way like somebody who has hurt feelings. Mm. But that's what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I know she won't. She doesn't want to talk to him. But at the same time, if this 14-year-old has access to the dad as well,
of course,
presumably he's going to be, the 14-year-old is going to be asking dad
100%.
What happened. And so
they need to be saying similar.
Same thing, yeah.
At least
even
similar.
Even if she sends him a text or something, just to say, this is what I'm
saying. And it might be at
that
stage where communication does need to be in writing. A whole lot can get confused in text, though. So just be really careful and factual about that. But just saying, look, you know, our child is asking, I've been saying that you and I are working things out, but I'm not sharing any details. And I've even told him that the reasons for our separation are between us. It would be helpful if we're both saying the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, absolutely do that. But I just also think for this parent, you know, mind yourself. This just feels really raw. This feels like you're really wounded with this. You deserve a space to work that through. You know, consider going for some therapy, individual therapy, to really work through all of this experience. Because there is a grief at the end of a relationship, particularly if you didn't really see it coming.
Yeah.
And it was that something happened and you can't forgive it and you can't move on, and it has sparked the end. Make sure you activate your own support network so that you have a safe, contained place, be it in a therapist's office or with friends or maybe both, where you can emotionally exhale all your thoughts and feelings unfiltered about your ex-partner, and then you are less likely to let that slip to your children.
Yeah. My son is 12 and he can get very upset when something happens that he thinks he'll get in trouble for. His teacher said that an incident happened in the class that she knew was carried out by one of the boys. And when the teacher queried it with them as a group, he burst into tears, even though he didn't do anything. I'm terrified that he will do something that is serious, crash my car when he's older, for example, but would be so terrified by his actions that he would do something stupid, run away from home, etc. I can overreact in the moment by shouting. This can happen because I get frightened by the situation or it comes at a time when I'm stressed with work. I hate that part of my personality. I'm sensitive and I love hard and I get upset hard. My son is exactly the same.
Do you know, I think this parent is answering their own question there at the end. I mean, you're a sensitive parent, parenting a sensitive child, but you understand him, so let him know that he's understood by you.
Yeah.
I think that's such a gift that you can give him. And I know that being aware of our own issues and the things that we get wrong, we're very good as parents at, you know, being hyper aware of what we get wrong.
Yes.
And we are less aware of what we're getting right. But you do see, look, I tend to do this and I tend to do that and this is why. When we lose it, and I am saying when, not if, but when we lose it with our kids or we snap or we verbally lash out or whatever it might be, really, if we can focus on how do we do repair following that rupture. So if you yell at your kid or shout at your kid, there is a rupture. They get a fright. They're upset. You're upset. Everybody's upset. And then it's what you do afterwards. And when you come back in and you say, look, my feelings got really loud. I got a fright when that happened. And when I got frightened, I kind of flipped my lid and I lost it. And my feelings came out and they came out in a way that I really wish they hadn't. If I could go back and get a do-over, here's what I wish I had said instead. Can I get a do-over? Kids are incredibly forgiving of our parental transgressions. Like they really are. And then you say, this is what I wish I'd said when that situation happened. You're modeling for him in a really practical way, in a really experiential way, that when something doesn't go as planned or when something isn't working out the way you hoped, you can go back and make repair. You can say, I'm sorry, this is how I wish it went. Because what he really needs to learn is getting into trouble. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And at the moment he is, and I really feel for this kid, you know, that there's trouble with the teacher in class. The teacher probably knows exactly who it was, by the way, who did that, but is trying to do the whole, does somebody want to own up thing?
Yes.
But it just means everyone else is also exposed to the, are they going to own up moment and the tension.
Yeah.
And if you have a sensitive child, they are sponges for the emotional spillage of everybody else. They soak it all up. So even though he didn't do anything wrong, he was super aware somebody did. There was going to be trouble. Something was going to happen. And he got upset out of that place. So you really do have a very deep feeling child.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, he's 12. He's at that age now where he's going to be, his world is going to start getting bigger and bigger than just parents at home as well. You know, maybe another year before going to secondary school, for example. And so I think there are some little bits you could do. You could certainly talk to him at 12 years old about what getting into trouble means. Maybe give an example of your own rather than asking him first and saying, gosh, I remember when I was your age and I got in trouble for something. It's okay if you edit this to suit your agenda. That's fine, by the way. But that you talk about what it meant and I felt really bad and I got a fright. But then, you know, we worked through it and we got it. And then it really was okay. And everything went forward as normal. But also ask him to tell you what he thinks or what he imagines the worst thing about getting into trouble could be. And then you can break that down and go, okay, how realistic is that? How realistic? Because the fear is going to be bigger. I'd also make sure he has lots of sensory play, because kids who are deep feeling and very sensitive benefit from increased sensory play. It helps to take them out of their ruminating thoughts and ruminating heads and pull them down into their body moments in the now. And also make sure that there's lots of movement breaks. It's really helpful to move the body to free up that kind of held trapped emotion and pent up frustrations and fear and anxieties. So anything to do with like bouncing, walking, running, just climbing, rolling, just outdoor play is really helpful with that. Having a dance in the kitchen when he comes in from school, just putting on a bit of music and the two of you having a little dance, or whoever else is at home, everybody dance, can be really effective at just shaking it off, quite literally and figuratively. So I'd look at how much movement is in. And for you as well, you're identifying yourself. I'm going to pop up a resource on my own Instagram that is about parenting sensitive children. And I would also flag that Dr. Aoife Durkin is a really good resource on what it is to be parenting highly sensitive children as well. And she's on Instagram as Highly Sensitive Psychologist. It's worth checking out. She has a lot of resources and little clips up there. Because I think as a sensitive parent, you could be doing a lot of self-healing
Yes.
While also learning about how you can best respond to him in those moments of arousal.
Yeah. Also, when he grows up, he shouldn't be a spy on the basis of that.
Absolutely not. He'll find his own way of doing things and being,
Like many people around Ireland right now, I'm horrified about what is happening in the world, particularly in Gaza. I want to tell my young daughters, who are 8 and 10, about what's going on. I don't want to scare them, but I think it's important to explain to them what's happening. We watch the news each night in our house, and they will often pass comments about what they see, and I don't want to lie to them or water down the information. I've tried to find YouTube videos or books that help talk to children about difficult situations like this. None spring to mind. How would you go about telling them? I understand it's quite complicated, but I feel it's very important for them to know.
I think it is complicated because we are so activated ourselves as adults about what we're seeing and what's happening. And it's very difficult to give your kids rational, reasonable explanations and reflections when that's not where we're coming from ourselves. So just give yourself a break on that.
Yeah.
You know, this is hard. I do have another resource on having difficult conversations by age, and I'll throw that up later on social media too. But generally speaking, you have to use age-appropriate language, developmentally age-appropriate language.
Yeah.
Watch their reactions while you're talking to them or while they're watching the news, and be very sensitive and responsive to their anxiety. And you've got 2, 8, and 10, they could experience this very differently. Now, they're already watching the news with you, these two kids, so they already know quite a lot. Okay.
Yeah.
So be very careful to blend what are unfathomable images that they're seeing with a narrative. You know, don't just let them see the news and watch it and they're left holding that. You've got to turn it off and think and talk together about what you've just seen and try as you can to help them to make meaning of it. So, you know, UNICEF have a really nice resource page on their website about talking to children about war, actually, specifically. So that's worth looking up on unicef.org. That's really helpful. But we have to give some context for where in the world this is happening. Show them on a map, show them where we are, show them where this is happening. Because young children still very much think, is this in our town? Is this in our country? And it's all quite abstract for them to get their head around. And I think you want to really speak with compassion rather than judgment about either, no matter what your beliefs are, either side.
Yes,
don't talk about people being bad or evil. Talk about compassion and kindness, emphasizing every person's right to live safely in their country and in their home, and highlighting how many countries are coming together for global action to try and push for peace, and that two countries can live safely side by side. And it's not just, as I think this parent is alluding to, in Gaza. We're also talking about Russia, Ukraine. We're talking about Sudan, Yemen, other parts of the world. There is a campaign, Sean, that's worth, and I think it's nice, if especially if your children are aware of this, called nottostopwar.com. And the not is K-N-O-T. And if you look that up, and it's something I'm involved in myself, it's on the 1st of June, which is International Children's Day and UN Day of Parents. It's just calling to tie a simple knot with piece of white gauze from your first aid kit or a white ribbon or whatever you have. And it's a symbol just to say we're calling for peace. War is not on. And I think that could be something really nice that your children could get involved in with you. They could tie it around their wrist. They could tie it around a tree or on your door knocker, whatever works for you. But they can feel this is our action to say we don't think war is on and we want peace. And it's just something practical. So if you look at that website, nottostopwar.com, there's a lot of information up there as well.
Joanne, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.